All right, welcome to a special episode of Talking Fail, where we are going to revisit Flat Earth, and we have our Flat Earth expert from last time, Mateus.
Yep, hello.
And we have a Globe Earth, pro Globe Earth, Josh from Nerdy People Play D&D, and previous guest. Hi, Josh.
Hey.
All right, so...
And that's it. That's everyone.
Oh, I'm sorry, and Will. Will's here, too.
Oh, and Will.
Yeah.
I was hoping I was the Flat Earth expert. My feelings were a little bit hurt.
Well, we'll see how this goes. I'm going to... I'll basically try and kind of guide the conversation a little bit and try and be an impartial moderator. I do still lean towards the globe theory of Earth. But I'll try and keep that off, out of my bias out of the way. I wrote down some of the points that Mateus made last time, mm-hmm. And so I mean, are we good to just want to go through kind of one by one some of the points that he made last time, and then Josh, if you wanted to, rebut.
I don't know if rebut's the right word. Discuss. Because I don't necessarily need to start an argument.
Okay. Yeah, well,
more than we're going to have. More than we're going to have.
Yeah. All right. So, I should have asked you, Josh. There's in the last video or the last episode, Mateus mentioned the 200 truths. The Earth isn't a ball. I didn't warn you that I was going to bring that up, but
I mentioned the 200 proofs.
Sorry,
it's an Eric Dubay video.
Oh, okay.
I watched it, and I thought it was interesting, but I felt like I think I watched like 5 minutes of it because it's a 20-minute video. Yeah. But I felt like most of the things could be explained away, or explained because. The things that they were saying made sense if you took away gravity from the equation.
Right.
So is that something that – I mean, is the way we perceive gravity incorrect according to Flat Earth?
Yeah.
Like, so how does that
work? A lot of people in Flat Earth basically just say, like, Big G is a hoax. It's something, that Einstein created, right? So, like, Einstein – I mean, Newton and gravity, but – Einstein created like the theory of relativity after he couldn't prove that the Earth was spinning. So, like the whole Big G being a hoax, I'm kind of for, because it's all about density and buoyancy. If it's lighter than air, like helium, it breaks the rules of gravity and floats out into the great beyond, right? Or I think hits the dome probably and then pops. But and then if it's heavier, than water, it sinks in water, et cetera. So it's really just about density and buoyancy, and we can see that in chemical equations and in chemistry. Like, when they have, the content of different liquids kind of layered as it's going up and up.
Different viscosity or whatever.
And at the top is a ping pong ball, and at the bottom is a rock or something, I don't know. Yeah, I basically just don't buy it.
Josh, you're making a face.
Sorry. Okay. I'm making a face for two reasons. One is I can hear about 3/4 of what is being said.
Okay.
Please forgive me on that. The second is I didn't know about the 200 proofs.
Yeah, that's my bad.
Ball. Earth is not a ball. Sorry. And I would have gone ahead and read it, and I do apologize. So please forgive me that. A lot of the notes I guess I made down were from the episode you were on the first time, and I was like, what? And that is essentially Josh's reaction to a lot of things, so please forgive Josh that.
And no, that's basically the reaction I get from most people a lot of times when I'm not even talking about Flat Earth. So it's something that I'm used to.
Okay. So what were you saying about Einstein's theory of relativity?
Right. So basically, like, he himself said that there's no scientific proof or way to prove that we're even spinning at the 1,000 miles an hour around the equator, is mostly believed. And so he then took that out of frustration and into the theory of relativity and kind of to expand into really kind of number out like our beliefs on gravity right now, or still to this day, basically, roughly. That's something I heard recently. I mean, I can't say that I'm the expert like that you said I was.
Yeah, because, okay, what I'm doing is I am quickly, unfortunately, I can read pretty well for an Australian. So I'm just quickly reading through relativity. And it, I mean, okay, special relativity is more to do with the structure of space-time, how all things are interconnected, mm-hmm. essentially. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mention anything about we cannot prove this is not happening.
Mm. Right,
so
yeah.
Whereabouts did you source that?
Well, it's... I heard that like it was one of the it was before he started the theory of relativity that he tried to prove for himself that not even that the Earth is moving around the sun or that the sun is moving around the Milky Way or something, just simply that it's rotating on the axis that it, you know, that it, you know, that the ball Earth is supposedly doing, and that he was
again, and I apologize for my rudeness and potentially my nitpicking. Where did you source that from?
Dude, I cannot give you a source at the moment.
That's pretty fair.
I'm
putting you on the spot.
No, what I can do is just kind of like run over some science tests that have been done and kind of show you those. For example, like Aries failure, how the like starlight moves and when the telescope like remains stationary. There's the Michelson-Morley, which shows basically that there's no rotation of Earth. There's the Michelson-Gale, which shows that the aether moves and not Earth. There's a bunch of stuff.
Now, so,
yeah. Michelson-Morley?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know what the aether is, but I'm pretty sure Tyler doesn't know. Could you explain that to Tyler, please?
I don't really know like how to explain the aether. I guess it would be saying like what's under, you know, the dome, basically everything like from the air we breathe to the atmosphere to the sun, the luminaries, you know, the stars, all of those things are, I believe, moving within like this separation of the waters from the waters, you know, that the Bible talks about.
I think I did a little bit of research on the aether, and it seemed like it was almost described like almost like an ocean current, but in space or in air. And I mean, according to things like Wikipedia, it says that it, you know, it was disproved.
Because he was trying to prove the existence of a substance called aether, mm-hmm. which was believed to fill empty space.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And. Yeah. What there is generally found is, and I'm just reading a few things very, very quickly because this is one of those times when you think, you know, it would have been really useful, Josh, to ask for notes.
No, it's all good.
No, and that's probably my bad.
I like the free form kind of way of discussing things.
Yeah. Give me a sec. Yeah, it's essentially saying that aether was one of those things that they couldn't necessarily find.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of thing that you're getting at?
No, because actually in the Michelson, what is it? Morley? No, Michelson-Gale experiment, it's that the aether moves, not Earth. It was basically the proof. There's the Michelson-Morley, and then there's also the Michelson-Gale. And they might give you more information on the Michelson-Gale. Yeah.
The Michelson guy gets around.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Hmm. Will, what is your explanation for the aether?
To me, a lot of the theory sounds like, you know, you don't believe in gravity. It's just like something else. You just like stay there, right? Mm. So I think the aether is just like a different explanation for kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I could see that. Look, I mean, obviously, if I drop my phone, I know that my phone's going to fall. But I'm not saying that, you know, that can be taken to the extent of kind of, I don't know, proving that it exists, like in terms of space time and other.
So I guess ways. if gravity as it's commonly known, mm-hmm. doesn't exist,
mm-hmm.
I guess how does that work? How does your phone fall?
Yeah, because like I said earlier, it's denser than air. Okay. It's heavier than air, and it'll also sink because it's heavier than the water. Okay. So it's like if you get petrified wood and you put that in water, it's actually not going to sink. It's going to float. It just depends on the density of that substance versus, you know, what it's around.
Josh, sorry, were you chiming in?
Sorry, yeah, okay. Again, this is Josh reading very quickly, so please forgive me for a lot of intellectual sins.
I forgive you.
Thank you. Although forgiveness from Will is like
what? Yeah.
Odd. Yeah, it doesn't.
It's like finding a penny on the ground, and then you find out it's not actually a penny.
Like, well, in Australia, finding a penny on the ground, if it's an Australian penny, you're probably doing it right. So,
Australian currency joke.
Yeah, it's a lost on me. I don't know.
Yeah, we essentially our currency used to be alcohol, and unfortunately we've moved on since then.
Oh, man. You almost had me as a visitor.
Well,
the beer's really good over there. I can say that.
Oh, I love Foster's.
It's not just Foster's. That's insulting.
I've already made too many Foster's.
This discussion is over now.
All right, so reason, sorry, Josh.
First of all, the reason we export Foster's is because no one here drinks it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too.
I don't drink, and I can piss a better beer than Foster's. Okay, A quick reading through what special relativity is it's essentially the shared, it's essentially the relationship to two items that are traveling on the same plane through space, essentially, and how they relate to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Gravity is an interesting one. I mean, as far as I recall, the predominant theory of gravity is that it's still produced by mass. It is, however, I know, considered a weak force compared to things like magnetism, radioactivity, and radiation, those being two slightly different things from what I recall from high school. And so I know a lot of physics that used to be essentially look at gravity and say, guys, gravity is a weird thing because it's nowhere near as strong as we think it is. Essentially, it requires a curved space-time.
They're always talking about that curve, man. I could never find it, though.
Take a very big step back.
Yeah, I have, man. I have, and you can see that's the number one reason why I believe flat Earth. It might be one of your points. It's just I can see too far.
I mean, I don't know if Josh is lining something up, but
the biggest argument as far as I can't see the curve. That's actually one of the most observable proofs that the world is indeed round. In fact, it was known, and I think I do recall you mentioning this,
mm-hmm.
The curved Earth theory is older than Christ. In fact, it's potentially even older than the Old Testament. The observable proofs were actually seen by, not all of the Old Testament, but certainly parts of it. It was actually observed by the Greeks and the Egyptians at the time, and I mean, A, they had some pretty decent mathematicians, because we still use some of their math now. But B, the most observable proof they had was when watching for ships to come over the horizon, mm-hmm. they would always see the top of the sail first
right.
And then that would come towards them.
Right.
So if you want to argue observable proof, it's like, dude, you've said this thing, but this is a very, very well-known phenomenon as well.
Yeah, look, like, I actually, that's like number one. Ball Earth people, like, they say, hey, ships going over the curve. So I've done a lot of research on that. A lot of flat Earth people have done research on it. It basically has to do with a lot of different factors, like what's in the air that day, like the amount of pollution, the amount of water in the air, how far
because they had
away.
A lot of pollution back in the times of the ancient Greeks?
No, but they had more. Like, but if you're going to go out now and with me, like, for example, right before this started, I was saying that, like, the best way to prove flat Earth is for me to get a infrared camera with a really good zoom feature, because those ships that you saw with your eye going over the curve, you can then zoom in really far with this new digital zoom, and they'll come back up over the imaginary curve. It just has to do with the law of perspective. As you're further away from something, that thing is going to be smaller and smaller and smaller, eventually to the point where you can't see it, because essentially our atmosphere is like a lens. When the light from the sun hits our air that has a lot of water in it, it's going to magnify it and it's going to bend it downwards. So that's why, you know, you can't see China from the west coast of the U.S., for example. You know what I mean? But that's also why you can see Russia from Alaska. Like Sarah Palin herself said, I can see Russia from my backyard.
That one, I'll chime in real quick. Yeah. That was from Saturday Night Live,
right,
where they were making fun of her.
Was it? Oh,
she,
okay.
I'm pretty sure she never actually said the real Sarah Palin.
Okay.
I know that Tina Fey as Sarah Palin said, "Well, I can see Russia from my house."
I think they were actually quoting her, though. But anyway, so that's the thing. That's the number one reason why I believe it, is because let's say this small rock or like a mountain or something was just barely sticking up over the ocean, right? And it's 50 miles away, and it's only 50 feet high, and you're at sea level looking at this thing that should be under the curve, you know, well under the curve by at least 10 to 20 to 30. I don't know what the exact calculation is right now off the top of my head, but it should be under the curve, and it's not. You can see this all over in different parts of the earth, like not even just over oceans, over lakes as well. You can see the Chicago skyline from Lake Michigan on the other side on a clear day. And what the scientists will say is, you know, oh, that's a refraction. It's, you know, it's like a inverted image that got inverted again, and that's why you can see it like that. It's like, no, that is what it is. You can see the skyline. You can see almost down to the very bottom of those buildings, not quite, because of the stuff that's in the air at that level over water, the amount of water that's there. It keeps you from seeing it, but like the whole exact thing, but that just comes down to perspective. So yeah, that's kind of my viewpoint on it.
Before Josh chimes in, I did look up real quick the quote. There was an interview that she had where she said, quote, there are about Russia,
yeah,
quote, there are next door neighbors. You can actually see Russia land here in Alaska, from an island in Alaska.
Right.
And then Saturday Night Live did that. Oh, I can see Russia from my house.
Right, yeah.
So, Josh, did you have something to respond to Matthias?
Part of me wants to say, quoting Sarah Palin as any form of intellectual argument.
Yes.
Immediately make me think.
Trust it. Yeah. No, I know that's part of the joke, but.
Yes. Thank you. As far as I know, that with Sarah Palin, she was trying to be, I don't want to say metaphorical, but, you know, somewhat poetic, shall we say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. There's also, okay, I will confess I was semi-following your argument, because mm-hmm. I'm also having a look at a lot of the things you said, like the Michelson-Gale experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I really wish I'd stayed in school, because that would have been really good.
Stay in school, kids.
Yeah, don't get kicked out. It's, you know, generally a good idea. To kind of have a look at a lot of the refraction arguments,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of... Okay, and this is one of those things where I do not want to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, although my response would be, I don't know what I'm talking about. And there is a lot of interesting argument regarding the use of refractive photography.
Mm-hmm.
With an infrared camera, not refractive photography. Sorry, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, you're just saying there's lots of uses for infrared. Yeah, there is.
No. There's a lot of arguments against it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Saying, guys, this is not how that works. And the second is, I guess my a large part of my argument would be, where did you go to uni?
I'm not through uni right now. I've been to a school in Seattle, and then now I'm just in a community college in Folsom, California right now.
Studying what?
So yeah, I don't have any kind of certificate that backs up my Flat Earth ideas. Okay. But
The reason I bring this up, and this is very, very foundational, and it is also part of what a friend of – I had an argument with a buddy of mine. This person has a lot of qualifications I do not have. My qualifications are in political science and sociology. So in other words, if you ask me how do groups of people think, I can bore you to tears with a talk that means absolutely nothing, and then I can run away and it's great. But more seriously, what I can do is I can say, hey, look, here's a bunch of theoretical frameworks that we use, not so much to define how people act, but in a way of analyzing it. Because it's very, very hard to say why a group of people do anything because, you know, a bunch of people also vote Republican, and that just mystifies the hell out of me. And now I know I'm being naughty, and I apologize.
Josh, easy.
I would say if you are going to argue with scientists, have you actually done an interrogation of their data?
Right.
And do you have a level of qualification and study where you can say, I am qualified to look at that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I can say I don't, but I think it's actually, it should be the opposite. It should be, okay, you want to prove that we live on a ball? Okay, walk for 10 miles, you know, in a straight line and measure, you know, how much amount of curvature you've went over. Because it's, what is it, like a six inches, 8 inches per square mile or something like that. So when you're,
I think it, I read the thing about 8 inches per square mile.
Yeah, 8 inches per square mile.
With a really good zoom.
Right. So, and then I didn't even bring up this other, experiment to look at this data. But I feel like to say that only people with certificates and, degrees, and are kind of already too deep in the system can look at the data that was collected is kind of unfair. Like, I think it's kind of, I think that's kind of a backwards way of thinking, actually, because then you're not letting the public, like, know about scientific stuff. And that's kind of part of the reason why they make scientific stuff seem so complicated, in a way, is to keep the general people away from it, you know?
So, I would argue, and okay, to a degree, I would agree with you. Yes, they do try and keep the general public away from a lot of things. And okay, there is, but also there are a lot of people who try and bring the general public in on a lot of these things because they realize, my God, would not my life be so much easier if people actually understood what the hell I was saying? There is, however, okay, and this is going into British sketch comedy, so Tyler has shown that he knows at least one or two things about that. Thank you, Tyler.
Hi.
There is indeed a British sketch comedy where they're interviewing a scientist, and they're like, okay, can you break this down for the layman? And he just says, nope.
Right.
Can you give us an example we can understand? And he's like, well, I can, but you'd first need to go to uni to understand these very basic foundational aspects of what I'm about to say. Otherwise, what I'm going to say is going to sound like the most meaningless bullshit you've ever heard.
Right.
And to a degree, that is extraordinarily accurate.
Depends on the subject. I mean, when you're talking about biblical cosmology, you can open the Bible and there's several verses that coincide with a stationary earth. It says the earth does not move. And I take the Bible as truth. I don't take scientific studies as truth because all studies have, you know, their flaws and stuff, for example. And those things can lead to, you know, I think, just, I don't know, misinformation. Like, because we were talking about curvature, there is one more experiment that I want you to look up. It's called the Bedford level, which basically found that there was zero curvature in 6 miles of canal.
While Josh is looking that up, I did watch some videos on this kind of concept. You know, there's the canals, there's There was one video where they were talking about, you know, engineers, when they're building like railroad tracks, mm-hmm. they don't have to take into account the curvature. I just assume, or I didn't do my research, but it seems to me that those kinds of things, the curve is such a small thing that happens over time to where, like, if you're doing railroad tracks and you have like a track that's 50 feet long, you put that down. The curve of the Earth isn't actually going to be enough.
There
of
a was
scale.
A refutation of the canal experiment in 1901. Yeah, where are we?
Sorry. For me, it just seems like scale, where you do like 50 feet at a time, you don't need to account for it, and then another 50 feet, you know, there's going to be a small micro gap.
Is he talking about a canal where you're digging under the Earth, and if you were just going straight forever, you would pop out at the top?
No, I'm literally just talking about like a channel. Normal channel.
Oh,
like
a channel?
One that could be behind like a school, for example. Like,
It just seems to me those things, it's scale.
It's designed that way, is what you're kind of saying.
It's just the fact that the Earth is so big,
right,
that the curve is very hard to perceive when you're working on a very small scale thing. To humans, you know, 1,000 feet is huge. But in terms of the Earth, is very, very small, and you wouldn't notice the curvature.
Right.
So, but Josh, you had something?
I had a couple of things. The first, kind of taking a two-step thing back. If you were sick, would you go see someone who had done, say, you know, 10 to 12 years at university? Or would you see someone who's like, oh, no idea, mate, but I'll have a crack? I work for a company that is in the medical, well, we're next to the medical industry, and I can assure you I would see that first person very happily. Partially because I've heard some of the things that I've heard from people that should know better, and it's a case of that, no, that does not add up. That does not add up at all. You should not be treating people. So that would be kind of my counter argument to you. It's like, dude, if you're going to say all these people that have done all that work in university working on these things, if you're going to say, sorry, dude, it should be the other way around. We should let amateurs in. Cool. Let me know when you open up the first hospital. I will be certain to not ever go there. Very, very certain. And I realize I'm being nitpicky and an asshole, but I apologize. But it is a way of taking your argument saying, well, if you're going to extend that way, if you're going to use that as an argument, here is a logical conclusion to it. And I realize I'm being somewhat mean, but I'm not trying to attack you as a human being.
It just has nothing to do with flat Earth, but yeah. Flat Earth is totally community. It's like a community-based thing that everybody experiences. We all don't experience the Earth spinning, you know?
I have been assured by my wife that I have made the Earth move for her at least once.
TMI, Josh.
Sorry, Tyler. I just wanted to watch your reaction. And also to add to something you've said, Matthias, I too am a Christian. I accept the Bible is, I would say, truth but not fact, because I believe the two things are slightly different. And without wanting to argue semantics too much. Where it says the Earth can't be moved, and where it says – and this is something I very much remember from your first thing – you're quoting Psalms and Genesis, I believe.
I mean, basically a lot of it is in a lot of different parts, but when you open the Bible and you know, like, well, sorry, I shouldn't say you know, I've been trying to work on this, right? So it's like, when you believe that the Earth is flat and then you read it, you go, oh yeah, the sun and the moon all and the stars, them in Genesis 1:17, were placed in the firmament. So they're okay. Wow, interesting. That's what the Bible says.
Which version of the Bible? Because which translation?
I could pull up
the translation.
I could pull up
really
the Hebrew roots right now and show you right here.
As long as we're not using the Message, because that thing is just irritating as hell.
Genesis 1:16, and God made two great lights. The lesser light to rule the day, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also, and God set them
in the firmament of the heaven, singular, to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night and divide the light from the darkness. And it was, yeah, et cetera. So, okay. So yeah, like I look at those things and I go, you know, Jesus says himself, it's, you know, if I can't even tell you about earthly things, how are you supposed to know about higher things? Right.
Could you apply that though to, sorry, Josh, could you apply that though to, when God is handing down the truths to the people who wrote the Bible and explaining, oh, well, you know, I put the sun in the sky, in the heaven, and he's using terms that those people would know.
Right.
You know, because that's, you know, kind of the same idea that what Jesus just said. Wouldn't that be, and then we're taking those ideas from those people, almost like, almost like a translation issue, or trying to read too much into the specific phrasing.
I don't think so. Because like in that Hebrew roots, like version that I just showed you, I mean, you can look at each word and then it says, okay, if you're talking about a proper thing, like when it says the greater light, you look on the word that it chose for light, and it can mean a lot of different things if the scripture is clearly saying that it's a metaphorical reference. Then okay. It would be talking about like a chandelier or like, okay. Here, hold on.
I didn't want to interrupt too much because I know Josh had something.
I personally believe like that it's that, yeah, maybe I am looking into it with that lens, but I also can look at the Hebrew and be like, okay, it's still referring to the sun, you know? Anyway.
Okay, sorry, Josh, go ahead.
Sure. I mean, yeah, and this comes out from the very little bit of theology I did as an elective at uni.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it comes down to the fact that Genesis wasn't, and this is partially what Tyler was saying. I was about to say Will, and then I realized I was like really, really not correct.
Thank you.
I can pick you two apart now without even having to look at you. It's great. From what I recall, Genesis was not written and is not even interpreted by any, you know, serious scholar that I had to read about as being even written in a literal fashion. It was written as a poem or a story. It was written as a way as, here is a bunch of things we don't completely understand, but here's a great way we actually have to kind of put this together as a narrative. And that's a very, very common narrative.
Yeah, I've heard that explanation and that narrative before, but I mean, there's also dates in Genesis, and there's like things that you can trace back, and hence why like the, what is the word, like the, I don't know, like the, it's lineage. Also, yeah, the lineage, the history of it is actually from the times that it says it was. So I don't know, I can go along with, yeah, sure, of course there's references to, you know, poetry, and there's references to like these
figurative ideas,
but
say for argument's sake, Noah's Ark.
Yeah, no, that I believe like the heavens opened, and when you see like the Milky Way at night, like the firmament was opened and water came down from the heavens, because it says, you know, God made the firmament to separate the waters from the water. So there's more water above.
Okay, no. I'm not disputing I'm asking you, you believe it exactly as it's written in the Bible?
Yeah, I do, because there's tons of other ancient civilizations that have pointed to that actually happening to them.
So like the Sumerians, for example, where we have the oldest example, and we know that it's well over
12,000,
6,000 years old.
Yeah. They're saying it's 12.
Which,
you know,
wouldn't match up with the dating that you're suggesting.
Yeah. Look, you know, I don't, it's not even for me, like, it's like, who's telling me that it's 12,000 years old? You know, it's like, carbon dating has recently, like, carbon dating has even been like flawed and like shown to be flawed. There's times when people carbon date something like I forget what the example was, but it was like way off by hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah. There were examples where carbon dating was incorrect, and they actually discovered, again, okay, The source I am going with is a friend of mine who is a civil is a mechanical engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be upset if I called him a civil engineer because his explanation is, Josh, I make weapons, not targets. That's how the British think, apparently. What he was saying is that, yeah, carbon dating was found to be inaccurate until they learned how to measure it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the issues came down to when we started letting off atom bombs
mm-hmm.
and other nuclear devices, which did throw it out. But when they learned to account for that, they were still able to say, actually, no, we can actually figure out how old these things are.
Right.
I mean, this is taken from a book called Sapiens, which is a very, very well-known book. You guys... No.
Nope, I haven't read it.
I think I've heard of it, but...
All right. Was it it's a Star Wars Expanded Universe book? Because that's the only book I've ever read.
Oh, man.
No, it was written by a guy called Yuval Noah Harari. He's an Israeli historian, and I've read his first book, and it's really good. He actually points out, guys, we've got a lot of different ways of measuring a lot of histories and prehistory. To suggest that, I mean, A, Australian Aboriginals have been here for about 60,000 years, and we have a lot of different records we use, not just carbon dating.
Right.
Okay. Well, but a lot of things which suggest here's how we can track when they arrived. We can actually look at extinction records and a lot of other bits and pieces.
And we can also verify that the flipping arc landed where it said it did. So, I mean, I don't know. That to me, debating about when or, you know, if it happened is kind of silly. Like, I trust that it happened, so I don't know. At least in my mind, it happened. There's something called there's a guy, and he started this website called FlatEarthDoctrine.com, and I want you to take a look at it because he basically says if you're able to find one verse that unambiguously states that the Earth to be globular or spherical, please email it to me. And then, you know, if you're able to find one verse that unambiguously states the Earth to be spinning or not, or even moving, not just shaking, please email it to me. And, you know, he wrote a book called The Doctrine of the Shape of the Earth, A Comprehensive Biblical Perspective. And, I've watched a lot of his videos. I haven't read the book yet, but, you know, he then goes on to say, you know, there's over 200 Bible passages listed on the back of the t-shirt that you can buy and stuff. And it's interesting, to a point where it's like, I don't know. I'm not trying to say that like flat earth has its own gospel or that it's like the only way for a person to be saved, but it's like, no, there's just this one gospel. But when I'm pointing to Genesis being true and to like, I don't know, like
God, I'm not arguing you know? Genesis isn't true.
Yeah.
I'm arguing that it's not factual.
Right.
And there is a difference.
Well, you know, even when it's talking about things like how, I don't know if it's in Genesis that God talks about this, but God says that the earth is like his footstool, right? So if I think I might have even brought this up in the last one.
Yeah, you did in the last one.
It's got pillars and a dome over it. So that's how you would picture a footstool, you know? Either that or
it was a metaphor.
Not an exercise ball, you know. You don't really use metaphor. An exercise. Right. No, I know. Right. And I think it's the great thing about theology, as far as I know, and when you're talking about Jesus in general, is usually when you ask him for things or when you're trying to know the answer to when there's multiple factors, it's usually a yes and, you know, like yes, you can take this metaphorically and also yes, you can take this physically because that's how the spiritual realm works. The spiritual realm reflects the physical realm. You know, if you learn more about plants and about getting rooted and about like the slow process that it takes to garden something and wield fruit, then in your life, you know, you're going to be able to produce better fruit in a way. You know what I mean?
I would say yes, but also, I mean, the Israelites were famous for being not one of the first agrarian peoples, but they were, I mean, yes, the Bible is full of metaphor and poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm saying, I'm not going to argue truth. I agree in the truth of the Bible that, you know, we should not be crappy to each other and love one another and treat everyone generally decently. That's kind of lovely, actually. It's one of the best things in there.
Right.
But to say that it's fact is where my brain says, not all of it.
Right.
And now, before you start on me,
yes,
I'm aware there's a lot of independent historians who verify the existence of Jesus. Tacitus, mm-hmm. Josephus, a lot of contemporaries around then all say, yeah, he was a real guy. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We can prove he was real. Mm-hmm. And that's all cool. And yes, I have witnessed the miraculous. I have seen and experienced things about which I don't want to go into because I have about 9 minutes.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
some of it's kind of, it's sacred to Josh stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there are areas of the Bible where it's like, this is truth, but it's not fact.
Yeah.
Okay. And I can look at things where it says, the earth is hung in space. It's like, yeah, it is. That's how gravity works.
Yeah. I would disagree.
So would you, because in the Bible it also says, where God tells the Israelites, don't eat specific animals, don't mm-hmm. have, clothing of ceremonial the two different types of fabric and don't brand your body, those kinds of things.
I'm not a Torah observer. I think that can lead to, you know, there's the new covenant now. We don't have to be in the old covenant. I think a lot of like the push for like old covenant has almost like led to different spiritual things that are not healthy. But what I wanted to say about Old Testament scriptures is like it's packed full of flat earth stuff. So the earth was created before the sun. Universe is not complete, not ever expanding. Universe is complete, sorry, not ever expanding. It says that in Genesis 2:1, roughly.
Despite the fact they've observed it moving.
Well, that's the conspiracy, the shadow government,
right,
Josh.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's the people who fund NASA. So universe.
If it helps, I know a guy who actually works at NASA. And is a Christian. Yeah. And I asked him about this. And he's like, Josh, the only conspiracy we have is we'd like some more money so we can do more science. Exactly.
Is he Australian,
yeah,
though?
Fair enough, actually.
They,
yeah.
they love getting their $52 million a day or whatever it is. But anyway, well, so...
because science is expensive.
Earth is a disc or a circle, not a ball in the Bible. You know, paths are straight, not curved in the Bible. Waters are straight, not curved in Job 37:10. Earthquakes shake earth and does not move. Earth is fixed and immovable in a bunch of verses. Earth has pillars and hangs on nothing. Earth has a face.
Again, I mean, I'm looking through... Okay, right. I am looking through this guy's scriptures.
Right.
Genesis was written, and this is a textual analysis issue. Genesis is written as a poem or a story, as is Job. In fact, Job predates most of the Bible.
Yeah.
Jeremiah and Isaiah, like your prophets, both major and minor,
mm-hmm.
Even a basic look at them says, guys, a lot of this language is, again, it's poetic. It's artful.
Right.
It's
prophecy.
It uses...
almost. Sometimes, too. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not looking at content. I'm looking at style, and there's a difference. Style, yeah. To look at the style with how something's written defines how you analyze it. If I was to read a poem, say The Raven by Poe, I wouldn't read it thinking, okay, there was an actual raven that actually happened. No, this is a device of terror.
Mm-hmm.
This is a device of fear. This is explaining something the author was struggling with and just couldn't flat out. Well, maybe he could flat out say it, but this is his way of expressing himself.
Okay, so do you think that when it says that in Genesis that there's a firmament, that that's a metaphorical thing? Like, you know, like what do you do?
No,
what do you do in Genesis, you know, whatever it is?
I think it's an approximation of people trying to understand something very complicated and simplifying it down to what they could understand.
Okay, yeah.
Now, admittedly, Genesis would have been really helpful, amazingly mm-hmm. helpful, if it had just said, God came down, made a main man, and while he was here, here are the universal mathematical constant laws of the universe.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And that would have been great. Yeah. It would have saved us a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
But in his great wisdom, he decided, no, you want to find that out, you can find that out yourself. You ate the tree, go for gold, mate.
Right. So... basically another thing that is metaphorical in a way, where Jesus is going to return and every eye will see him. That can only be done on a flat earth. You know, like the sun moves backwards in 2 Kings. The sun stops moving in a couple different places. So I don't know, just consider it, like, ask God, like, hey, is this guy just crazy? You know, don't take like what I say to be like, you know, facts or anything. Like, I'm not fact checked, but I do love God. And like, I think as long as like there's this ability, like we are doing, to kind of agree on certain things and kind of show our different perspectives, I mean, that's all that we can do at the moment. And like, I think that's a start. A lot of people just dismiss flat earth people, and I appreciate you not really doing that to me.
Not to your face, anyways. Yeah. I mean, behind your back, I'm going to walk away, just punch the wall if you don't.
No,
sorry.
No, that's fine.
The one thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, one thing. I need to bring this up. Yeah. I was at the gym when I was listening to that episode, and I've never lifted 120 kilograms in a leg press so violently. Saturn was the Roman god who was the equivalent of the Greek god Kronos. Okay. He was considered essentially the god of space, time, and secrets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not an equivalent of Satan.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I mean,
have you looked into other? I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's other equivalences of. I mean, the reason why I say that is because, I don't know, all the.
Well, it's a linguistic. It's a linguistic thing.
Yeah, it's basically like Saturn, Saturn. Anyway, there's, you know, there's also
one's taken from, you know.
Oh, if you're gonna talk about
Saturn, is taken from. Saturn's taken from the Latin,
right?
Or at least, so it wouldn't have been from. It probably wouldn't have been from pure Latin. It probably would have been from one of those weird Italian languages that they had back then, because, you know, Rome was a mess.
Right.
Whereas Satan or Shaitan is taken from a completely different language.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. One more thing. I won't argue about the Saturn thing, but I will argue about planets.
I've got 3 minutes.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah. Quick. Planets. How can you see Venus and Mercury at night? That's my question. Because
they're stars.
You just said the planets are stars.
They reflect the light. Sorry.
So
yeah, I know. Yeah. I meant they twinkle. I can see.
Right. Right.
They reflect the
but
sunlight.
But what I mean is where they are. In terms of the way that our current, like, I don't know what you call it. Like, I don't know. The way that it's set up in the model now is that because they're so close to the sun and it's nighttime, we're facing away from them as the Earth spins away. So we're looking out into deep space another way. But still, every night we can see both Mercury and Venus. And
well,
those,
I mean, it also depends on where on Earth you are. If you're in Australia, you may not see...
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah.
Not every night. No. Right. Like there are times when we don't see Mars, and that's just normal.
But I mean, how can you see Mercury and Venus at the same time at night? Because I don't know. It has to. I don't know. I was kind of just roughly listening to this video that was talking about this guy, and he's explaining how, like, if sunlight is moving in this straight path, right? Then it's
it doesn't.
Right. Yeah. That's another thing that it's just like that. Okay, that's fair, okay. I guess.
it hits things and it bounces off. Right. That's why when you watch a sunrise, the light, okay, using my understanding of a round world, and I apologize for that, the sunlight essentially hits our atmosphere and it refracts across it.
Right.
So it actually follows it around, which is why when you're watching a sunrise, you see the light well before you see the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In my perspective, that's just because the sun's getting closer, but, you know, fair enough.
Right. Well, but we should, I mean, we're running out of time, so we should probably wrap it up. Josh, thank you for coming on.
Oh, actually, sorry, yes? one last thing that's interesting about the thing you brought up about seeing stars and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
Back in the 1700s, and Josh knows this because he did pay attention to this bit at school. Back in the 1700s, a British fellow was sent halfway around the world in order to observe the... the eclipse. Thank you. The eclipse of Venus, in order that we could actually start measuring the distance between Venus, the sun, ourselves, etc., etc., etc. And the reason I know this is because that man's name was Jack. Gosh darn it, to the guy, Captain James Cook.
Okay.
All right.
He who mapped the east coast of Australia.
Ah, yeah, that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Will jumped. There we go.
I've heard of him.
Yeah. Although he was actually a lieutenant commander, but we call him captain because he was in charge of a ship.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually an interesting thing about just, we know there is distance between these things because we can observe them, mm-hmm. and it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it doesn't add to the argument. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I think what ends the argument is that there's two different, you know, tracks on the northern and southern hemisphere of the stars, and they kind of, that kind of points to a flat Earth too. But anyway, that's different.
All right. But
I'll ask my buddy at NASA about it. Yeah. And while he's there, I'll ask him if I can have some of that 52 million.
Remember, it stands for...
You'll probably say no.
Remember, it stands for never a straight answer. But yeah.
All right.
That's because the more we find out, the more we find out we didn't know before.
Yeah, that's true. Fair enough.
Well, have you ever stopped questioning?
Yeah, never. Never.
Well,
there you go.
Well, Josh, thank you for coming on. I know you have to get back to work.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm going to stop recording now.
Okay.
Before I have to cuss out Will.
Okay. Thank you.
Cheers.
All right. And then I just want to say thank you to Will for coming all the way out here. It was really great to have you on. Really deep discussions we had.
It's a long trek from the couch in the other room.
Yes.
Before we stop the recording, I wanted to mention one of the problems or like difficulties I have with the argument of flat Earth versus globe Earth.
Is that you hit the microphones?
Is that I hit microphones. And also... each side just says, oh, we have a scientist that says this. The other side says, we have a scientist that says this. And then they just totally discredit both sides.
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, well, we did this experiment. Oh, that doesn't count. And then we did this experiment that says your experiment doesn't count. Yeah, so sure. I say, all four of us, we get Josh back. We get a boat and we go out in the ocean with a telescope and we do the experiment ourselves.
Yeah, I'm down.
All right. Let's raise some money.
I'd say it would be easier to prove over a globe because the ocean's pretty tough to like go and just boat out in. But yeah, I'm down.
Thank you, Matthias, for coming back on.
Remember, brothers, for nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest, neither anything hid that shall not be known and come abroad. Luke 8:17. Knowledge shall be increased in this day that we're living in.
Which is I think is exactly what, you know, I think everybody should do is, you know, do research, you know, try and figure things out, you know, be active in what you believe in. Mm-hmm. And you know, try and know what you believe in. So, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no worries.
It was fun.
It was a good time.
Yeah,
I can't believe it's not R.I.P. Alex Trebek.
Okay, all right. Well, see you all next week. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.